Hey, you're listening to the Nakata Presents podcast. Nakata Presents is the official podcast for Nakata, the global community for academic advising. We are back continuing an amazing series on presidential perspectives. Here for the next in the series, let me turn it over to Dana Hebriard from Aquinas College. Dana, I'm looking forward to your conversation today.
Thanks, Matt. Welcome to Presidential Perspectives, reflections on the past, present, and future of Nakata, where we look to the future of Nakata by honoring the past. My name is Dana Hebriard, and I work at Aquinas College. I'm here with Karen Lewis from the University of Maryland College Park. Today, we're interviewing two of my favorites, past Nakata President Jennifer Jocelyn and current Nakata President Kyle Ross. Jennifer and Kyle, thank you so much for being here today. To start things off, we would love for each of you to introduce yourselves. Can you share your name, institution, as well as the years of your presidential term? We'll start with Jennifer.
Hi there. My name is Jennifer Jocelyn, and I'm an associate VP at Drury University. I'm in Springfield, Missouri, and I think the year of my presidency was 2011 to 2012.
And I'm Kyle Ross. I'm the head academic advisor for the College of Business at Oregon State University. I've been a member with Nakata since 2012, and I'm the president for the 2021 to 2022 term. So exactly 10 years after Jennifer.
Hey.
Woo!
Nice. We didn't even plan that. Right. Jennifer, truthfully, very truthfully, your enthusiasm for Nakata has always inspired me. And your dedication is such that you even spent part of your career working in the Nakata executive office. So can you please tell us what impact Nakata has had on your career trajectory as a whole?
Gosh, the short answer is Nakata has been critical. Nakata gave me kind of a form and a general outline of how to be engaged in the advising profession. And so it sounds almost, it sounds odd to say it's been everything when there have been so many different institutions and so many great colleagues involved. And to be honest, some really great bosses who were willing to support my engagement. But when I say it gave it shape, I would say that, I mean, Nakata is like a vase, right? And it can be any shape you want it to be. And you pour yourself into it. And if you're really fortunate, the vase gets to change its shape as you go along. So I think when I started getting involved, I gave my first conference presentation in 2000. Then I started into elected leadership in 2005. There was a very traditional shape that vase was supposed to look like. You're supposed to get elected to one thing, then elected to the next thing, and on and on. And now, looking back, I realize I was doing content review for online and also written publications as early as 2000. I was giving conference presentations. I was attending the annual and trying to soak up as much as I could and serving on the LGBTA concerns committee at that time. So elected position was actually about the fifth or sixth thing I did. But in those days, we thought very much, very linear, like it was a ladder you climbed. And so over the course of my career, I've been lucky enough to have lots of different shapes of Nakata, the admin division, the advising community division, the region division, but also research and summer faculty and winter faculty and consulting for Nakata, working at the EO. So it's been a pretty complex picture over time, and it's been everything: the mentoring, the connections, the opportunities, the competencies, the professional development. Yeah, pretty broad, pretty neat. It's definitely changed my life.
I love that analogy. I mean, we could talk about terracotta vases, trumpet vases, pedestal vases.
Absolutely.
Take it all over the place. And I got a chance to know both you, Jennifer, and Kyle in the advising communities because you were the representative for the EO. And Kyle, you were one of the chairs of the advising community. Can you tell us a little bit about your journey in NACADA? I mean, it feels like your entire time on the board of directors so has been a very unique time, right? Kind of during the global pandemic. So that maybe has shaped a little bit of that board position. But even before that, you were involved with a lot of different things.
Yeah. So I kind of just drank the Kool-Aid real fast when I got engaged with NACADA. So I my very first thing with NACADA was in 2012 in Portland when I met Jennifer and several other wonderful colleagues. And friends, and it's really serendipitous that that was my very first NACADA event, and I'll be concluding my board term and presidency in Portland at the annual conference 10 years later, which is pretty wild. But, you know, in between that time, I started right away with wanting to present at conferences, and that's how I got engaged with NACADA in the first place, because I was really inspired to want to share a story between me and Lisa Lafter as my first supervisor about our supervisory relationship and how we work together. And she's like, great, we're going to just submit a conference proposal. I was like, what now? and then from there, it was serving on conference planning committees for the region, wanting to get involved in a few roles, but not really sure how to get started. And then at an annual conference, I ran into David Spikes, who then was like, you seem like a really passionate person about undecided exploratory students. Have you given thought to running for a chair of this commission, now advising community today? And I was like, what now? So that's kind of the motto of a lot of different leadership positions for me is what now? And so I was chair of the Undecided Exploratory Students Commission, then was a cluster representative and advising community division representative before getting on the board. But during that time, just like Jennifer said, that direction was also non-linear at the same time, presenting at conferences, content review, serving in a variety of steering committees and advisory boards, being a part of the Emerging Leaders Program and mentoring, and then writing articles in Academic Advising Today, Clearinghouse, and a few other places. So, you know, it was really incredible because as to what Jennifer was saying, way back when, it felt like there were fewer roles and kind of just this ladder approach. And then I come in and there were already all of these different ways to get involved. And that was really nice to just figure out where my strengths were. And then certainly, yeah, since being on the board, it was pretty much started in October of 2019, 5 months later, pandemic. And here we are still. And what I was thinking about with that is it's really funny that so much with the association changed during that time because we had to pivot in ways that everyone else did as well. So lots of things in how the association was running changed. But at the same time, what really makes NACADA what it is for our members didn't change. Like, we were still fostering collegiality even remotely. We were still creating this wonderful professional development opportunity for our members and advancing scholarship in ways that we may not have thought of before. So it lots changed, but also nothing changed at the same time because we were still doing what we do best for this association.
Well said.
Our next question is really about pathways, which you've both discussed excellently. So Jennifer, you were saying your pathway was nonlinear, and I hope I'm remembering this correctly, but in your presidential speech, I remember you saying that while you were running for president, you were also working on a steering committee for a regional conference because, you know, what if the whole president thing didn't work out? You still wanted to be doing something for the association, which I just thought was great. So, but was there a moment when you're doing all these things and you said to yourself, like, I want to run for president? Like, what made you decide to do that?
Yeah, good question. I would not recommend anyone else ever be president and region conference co-chair. That turned out to be it was a good idea to have a backup, but also not really healthy. So, you know, I want to be transparent about, you know, getting stuff done and being super reliable. And that was not a good idea. So, but it was, those were two great experiences. Those are fantastic experiences, and I wouldn't trade them, but neither would I recommend them in that way. I think I'm really that generation where you were supposed to run for something and then you were supposed to run for the next thing and on and on. And now it feels like folks, you know, we'll do two or three chair duties in one area or go over laterally and do some, you know. But I was a commission chair. I was on the council. I ran for the board. I got on the board. I had it all mapped out. My next timeline was last year on the board, I'll be president. And then I had dinner with Jane Drake and she said, "You're running for president this year." And I said, no. My timeline is a year from now. And she said, "You know, Nakata doesn't care about your timeline right now. Nakata needs you to run for president." And I was like, to paraphrase my good friend Kyle Ross, "What now?" And so, yeah. So I hemmed and I hawed and I was like, "Oh, I'm not ready." Da, da, da. And Jane delivered the way mentors do. She delivered that really great advice, which was, get over yourself and we need you to run. And so I ran. And so I was president during my second year on the board, which was a great year. And then I finished and I still had one more year on the board. So that was fascinating to still be on the board, see things carry through, be helpful if I needed, someone needed to be helpful. But still be serving as a board member. So that was a fascinating process, and it was the right thing to do to run. It was a good year, but it wasn't what I initially expected, but I'm still glad I did it.
How about you, Kyle? I'm wondering what influenced you to run for the board of directors, I think fairly early into your Nakata tenure.
Yeah, so I'll blame Nathan Vickers for that one. No, when I applied to be a part of the Emerging Leaders Program, at that point, I knew I really wanted to invest fully in Nakata, and I knew I wanted to give as much as I could back to the association, since the association had done so much for me in such a short amount of time. So I made that conscious decision. I want to give back in every way I possibly could. But I also didn't really know what that meant for me or like what direction that would go. So I applied for an Emerging Leaders Program because I was in this place of like, what would I do? Or where do my strengths align with that wanting to invest? And they paired me with Nathan Vickers, who was a wonderful mentor in helping me understand, here are all these different avenues. And I hear you on you wanting to invest in this association and as much as you possibly can. And one way you can do so is council and board positions in your future. And I was like, great. If that's a place where I can really like spend a whole ton of time, invest in the association, sign me up for it. And he's like, okay, here's a few ways to get there, but let's focus on how you're going to get started first. And so we dabbled a little bit in each of the three divisions, the administrative division, advising communities division, region division. And he's like, we'll see how things land. You know, you put your hand up for a variety of roles. Some things will stick, some things won't. And that's okay because you put your name out there and you tried. And don't expect to get yeses for everything. And that was a really helpful thing for me to hear because we have so many wonderful people in this association that also want to contribute. So dabbled in a variety of roles that way. And then it just happened that advising communities division was the one that really stuck and landed well, but then also like propelled me forward at an accelerating rate that neither Nathan nor I really planned for. We were like, oh, this is happening now. We're on this train ride, so let's go. From there, it just kind of fell in place. And there were days where I'm like, how did that happen at this point? And it just did. And then at one point we were talking and I was like, all right, well, I'm on the council and this is my last year. What are we doing? He's like, well, you're running for the board now, right? And I was like, what now? And so had that conversation of, am I ready? Should I be doing other things first? And his reminder to me was like, you care deeply about this association. You put in the time, you invest, and we need people like you on this board who will invest, who will commit. So yes, you're running. I was like, okay, yes, sir. And there we have it.
You know, you said something that I wanted to circle back to about fostering collegiality. And one of the things I really love about Nakata, I mean, at the start of the pandemic, seeing a Google document that was created by just members, open source, the whole concept of open sourcing online that people are sharing resources or best practices, or here's how we're getting through it, here's how we're doing advising when we can't see our students, and all of those things, I think kind of the leadership of Nakata had a hand in also supporting and influencing. So when you walked into those roles for both of you, Kyle, maybe for you first, are there things that you wish you would have learned or knew prior to being on the board or taking the position, and how do you see sort of that collegiality going further?
Yeah. So this was something that Nathan definitely queued me up to know ahead of going onto the board. So I knew it, but like, I didn't know to the extent of how much I really did need to like take this information in, is that when you're on the board, you're thinking strategy wise, 5 years, 7 years out from now. And so at that point, it's no longer about you or what you want to do today for the association, because when 5 years out from now, I'm not going to be on the board at that point. So you're thinking about what's best for other people ahead. And granted, there is work I wanted to do that I was like, I want to do this. I want to fix this now. I want to look at this or try this. And it was very conscious. And Nathan and I had a really, Nathan really helped me with stepping back and evaluating, is this about me or is this about the future and good of the association and a long-term strategy wise? And so that's one thing to really know about the board, is you're stepping back on a lot of conversations that you think, no, the board should be involved in these, but not really. We're not supposed to be in the weeds on the day-to-day operations of how an advising community is running or how Region 9 is going. It's about what are our strategic goals? What are the benchmarks we need to meet those strategic goals 5 years out from now? What resources should we be investing in where? And that might impact some groups in the ways that you want to, but ultimately it's so high up and step back. And I think a lot of people get into the board and that can be a little bit of a culture shock to want to be asking questions about, this is what I saw over here at this event this one time. And we're thinking, well, we'd love to attend to that, but that's for the council to work through. And here we need to talk about finances, strategic goals, and vision, mission, and other things.
What about you, Jennifer?
Oh, gosh. Kyle did a great job of talking about what you learn when you get there. One of the things I think Nakata has done better at in the last 15 years, 10 years, is formally preparing people for the role they're about to take on. And so they've just done better with, you're about to be a new chair. There's a training. Here's the online resources. You're about to serve on the council for the first time, or what's the difference between the council and the board? Those kinds of things. And so in previous generations, you might have picked that up from like other colleagues or from talking to Charlie Nutt or just seeing the meetings in action. And now, I mean, yay for more meetings, but there's lots of meetings and trainings that I hope make a difference for people. But just like our students never completely understand college after going through orientation, there's still so much learning on the job and in the role, and being open to that, relying on your colleagues who've done it before, listening to the leadership in the room, this, you know, and everyone who's involved, that makes it, and your liaisons who are there to help you. So I like, as Kyle said, there was kind of this moment where presidents were supposed to have, quote unquote, an issue, a thing they wanted to work on. Da, da, da. And there are two myths about that. One, you're not really in charge. It looks like you're in charge. You're not in charge. And then two, the second myth is you have any control over what your year is looking like. And Kyle is living that excitement right now. But I do know, even in the past years, you run, you write this great statement, you're elected, and the next thing you know, the executive director is calling you and saying, hey, we really need to look at the bylaws this year. Would you mind doing that? I was going to say, would you mind if that was part of your term? But let's be honest, would you mind doing that? And so, you know, you have issues. Like, I wanted to look at, well, we've always looked at diversity. We've always looked at leadership development. And I certainly wanted to look at tech. So I thought we would be looking at all three of those things. And we did. But we also talked, as Kyle said, you know, financial health, outreach, advisor, everything. We talked about everything for the whole year. So being collegial, like you're collegial on campus, those are skills that you're going to use in Nakata all the time. You actually learn to be a better colleague in Nakata because no one on this screen comes from the same institution. No one has, you know, only had one role. You really listen. Ideally, you listen before you start yammering. So there's so many more skills developed through engagement in this professional association, even then you learn on your own campus. And then you just bring it back and your boss sees it and people around you see it.
Absolutely. So it's interesting, we talked about earlier, it's been about 10 years, Jennifer, since you were president. What would you say were the biggest challenges at that time, either within the association or the advising profession or both?
Yeah, I would definitely come back to diversity issues, diversity engagement, leadership development. And at the time, we had a really early 20, it felt like an early 20th century technology infrastructure. And so we made some really great progress that year on how we would devote resources to that. And so that was really positive. At our mid-year meeting, I remember that mid-year board and council kind of thinking through how do we, and again, this was also a lot of member energy on this. Like, we have this great endowment. How do we put our endowment to use every day? And that kind of seed that was started with the idea that our technology infrastructure really needed help. And so at the mid-year board and council meeting, everyone in the room just got really good energy around what if we took a set amount of money and invested it over a 3-year period. And that 3-year period would be contingent on no national emergencies, no creek rising, no crisis, no tornado, but that 3 normal years we would invest, gosh, I think it was $100,000 over 3 years each year, and completely redo our website. And we completely redid and created really a customer management system. And that these systems aren't even the systems that are present today. These are the systems that were kind of mid-2000s, mid-2010s. And it helped us launch from a really museum-like website to a much more robust, a much more engaged website that gave birth to the website we have today. And then the customer management system, no comparison, from going from nothing to something. So that took Charlie's great idea. It took a great relationship with the president and the EO director to say, gosh, that is it exactly. We can risk a little safely over time, make the investments we need. And the whole board, we all crafted kind of the initiative that we would be voting on. It was a really dynamic moment. So that was a kind of a spontaneous issue that we really rose to the challenge of that. But throughout the year, always, every year I've been on the board, we have talked about who's involved in NACADA, why aren't more Black, Indigenous people of color involved in NACADA, who's in leadership, what are the programs we have that will nurture, support. But, you know, we just didn't have the sophisticated language and cultural movement that we have on this issue today. Think about in the last 10 years, how much smarter our conversations are, our work, our resources, the videos, just what we can do individually. So we've always been talking about it, but I'm so proud of where we are now and the hard work that's going into that. And then combined with that, like leadership development, we used to think very much of like, let's find one person and really support the heck out of them. So like, they'll be the lesbian or they'll be the person. Now we have so many people involved and we have ELP and all these other structures and all these other forums for involvement. So people can really grow without needing to the shoulder tap, for heaven's sakes. You know, they can engage, build, grow. And yeah, it just makes such a difference. So sorry, like every advisor in the world, you ask me what the time is and I tell you how to make a watch. But those have probably been the lingering issues for me over time.
But those are all amazing. And it's true. Like last 10 years, just how quickly we've moved. And both of you were involved when we were in Cincinnati, both of you were involved in pretty big announcements or a book that came out. Or Kyle, I mean, you made a pretty big announcement when you got up to the podium. I know that you're just starting right now your role as president, but can you tell us a little bit about that? And then maybe just what do you feel is sort of some success points for you?
Yeah. So what was really nice about me transitioning into this presidency term is that there's nothing new that has to happen, right? Like everything that I picked up are things that prior boards have been actively working diligently on. And so my role was more of just ensuring that this board carries forward that work in a productive way. And so there have been a few priorities that we've all been talking about for years that are still just in the works. So, you know, we worked on a new vision, mission, and strategic goals. And so that work concluded in one way, but the next step is now we need to benchmark those strategic goals. So that's one piece of work we're working on. With the vision, mission, goals was also an understanding that this is the new vision, mission, goals is a huge catalyst for transformation and potential change in this association. And so one thing we're now looking at is, well, does our structure support this new vision, mission, and strategic goals? What things can we change structurally to address concerns and things brought up by the region review report that was completed a couple of years back? The work of the Race, Ethnicity, Inclusion Work Group also identified, you know, it would be helpful just to even do this structure analysis and review from a perspective of DEI and see what comes of from that review. And so we're getting ready to launch that. That's going to be a three-phase approach. Phase one is just let's find our work group to do this work for 2 years, but also let's find a consultant to help us out at the same time with that. Phase two will be to actually do the review and have that work group working on that and with along with the consultant. And then phase three being the implementation piece of that. And so that's another thing. And I would say that's probably the part that when we get to October, I'll say that's the part that I really wanted to make sure happened was the at least getting the structure review process going, because it's monstrous when you think about the size of our organization, all of the things going on in it. And so, you know, when we thought about even just when we first had a conversation a couple of years ago about a new vision, mission, and goals, you could see everyone's faces in the room of like, whoa, like this is big. And where do we even start? And so getting to say, well, this work has now started will be really nice. Melinda, Michelle, and I are having some really interesting conversations to Jennifer's point about here we are now in the association, having done a lot of work around DEI. And now how does all of that work together? So we've got a new social justice advising community. We've had the work from the Race, Ethnicity, Inclusion work group that's propelling forward a new advisory board. We have the Inclusion Engagement Committee that's been longstanding. And we have several other advising communities that work for specific audience, student population, or institutional type. But at the end of the day, the work can't just stop in those little pockets. They all have to really start talking to each other to really think through what does deep organizational change look around DEI in general? And what does it look like to have systemic DEI efforts rather than we've done a lot, but now how do we get them all to work and collaborate together? So I'm really interested to see where that conversation goes to.
What about you, Jennifer?
Oh, gosh. I almost don't know. I mean, it's been so neat to be involved in NACADA for 22 years now and here where we are on some of these issues. So many successes and so much more good work still to go. I think that probably is one of the neatest things is the way we've expanded what we think of as NACADA, the way we've expanded leadership, the way we are bringing in critical readers, writers, thinkers, researchers on DEI, training and development, technology. So it is so exciting to see the org be so flexible and big, and not everything has to shoot out of the executive office. Like the regions are thriving and the communities are doing things. And now we have podcasts and the org is so neat. And so it is always a privilege to hear everything and see everything. I think there's so many challenges ahead in terms of continuing to promote what NACADA can do and encouraging people to invest in their own development, even when institutions may not be able to do so. So that has never gone away. I hope over time that we see BIPOC people really emerge as in the leadership roles that will strengthen us and nurture us in years to come. So, gosh, so many neat developments with so many talented people. The future is bright, I think.
And fun. I think we have a lot of fun too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, that sense also as we get bigger and there's a bigger tent, it becomes a lot. There's, it's a creator generation and we're only going to have more ways to be in touch with one another, more ways we're going to need each other. This has been such a high time for needing one another. So there is a small thing, as a small, being at a small school, we almost never left campus. So we've been on campus since May 2020, which means we got 6 weeks away at home and then we're back. And so there are about 2% of colleges and universities in the U.S. that never really went home. So those folks are, well, anyway, advisors in those institutions are very ingenious, but also super tired. And they're often not part of the conversation. Those schools that literally have to stay open to stay financially strong. Dana, I know you hear me on this.
As a small college person, yes, hear you loud and clear. It's very true.
Jennifer, I appreciate how just frank you've been about challenges the association has experienced, challenges you see ahead, but also like pointing out how far we've come and developed. Can you speak a little bit more about what you see in the future of NACADA and as of the advising profession as a whole?
Oh, I hope we stay really strong in the promotion of training and development. Mm-hmm. I think that everything we have, I mean, this is so advisor training and development as the center of the universe, but there's a point at which our commitment to ourselves, our commitment to one another, our commitment to students, our commitment to our institutions, even at times when our institution doesn't love us back, like we love them, it's not loving us back, we still are promoted, or we're still focusing on how we can help, what we need to know, what we need to understand, and how we need best practices to help serve students. And so for me, focus on advisor training and development is a long-term core of our field. It addresses peer-to-peer work. It addresses DEI. If we do our work individually in DEI and we encourage our institution and we encourage NACADA to do that work, then that just plays out again in the work we're doing in training and development. It's easy to get down the rabbit hole of professionalization, and it's easy to go down other kind of paths that we think might lead in the short term to an amplified role of advising. But at its core, we really have to be paying attention to, are we learning? Are our best practices really paying off with students? Are we being effective? How can we do better? Those kinds of things. So I don't have any sense that NACADA is moving away from that. Publications, print, electronic, e-tutorials. Oh, e-tutorials. That's been a great development. Anyway, so I feel the future is bright. And with leaders like Kyle and the board and you all, it's just going to continue to shine. But I also want us to stay pretty focused on some of the fundamentals of doing good work, holding ourselves to competent standards, and making sure we're staying committed to that work.
So, Kyle, we often hear the work of the board of directors described as having that 10,000 foot view of the association. So right now you are the president of the 10,000 foot view. Can you tell us about how you see the immediate future of NACADA?
Yeah. To Jennifer's point earlier, and it's particularly for small colleges and universities, folks are tired, right? And NACADA is a place to go for rejuvenation, reinvigoration, revitalization, as many words that begin with R-E I can think of, for advisors to feel heard, to feel like they're around people with similar minds. But even though that is a good place for people to turn to and look to, it's still an investment of time, personal energy, to give to the association, to contribute to your fellow colleagues and peers, and to advance the scholarship of advising. So that's a hard ask of anyone right now. Like even the idea of submitting a conference proposal, which for me feels like something I've just got like the back of my hand, feels harder, right? Everything feels harder and more time consuming, more energy investment. So I think in the immediacy of things, we need to figure out how folks can find ways to still contribute in ways big and small with the capacity that they have, which society is completely drained from us overall lately. So that's one thing. But overall, I'm really excited long-term wise, once we get past that point and we've gone through a period of healing and recovery from that, I'm really excited for where NACADA is going, because we are preserving what this association does best: content development, training and development, being able to help our members and professionals engage in professional development and networking. That's never going to go away, which was one thing I'm extremely grateful for. And we're just looking at new ways to keep engaging in that work. And one thing I sure hope does not go away anytime soon are our professional development competencies. That was a monumental moment for the association. And sure, those competencies might need to change a little bit as a profession changes over time. But I hope we never lose sight of those. And I hope every single member never loses sight of those for their ongoing development and immersion in the profession.
That's fantastic. Well, I mean, I just want to thank you both for your insights today. I feel like each one of these that we record, we're getting new like gems and sort of like nuggets of information, which was our whole goal when we started talking about putting this podcast together. So Kyle, Jennifer, I really, really appreciate your time and for sharing your experiences. And now we're going to turn it over to Matt for the final word.
Thank you, Karen. And just like you said, these have been fabulous interviews. And I 100% agree that these have had so many gems and nuggets of info for all of us to take with us. Dana, Karen, Jennifer, Kyle, loved every moment of this. Thank you so much. And as we wrap up, this has been the Nakata Presents podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And if this was your first time listening, we have plenty of previous episodes to check out. Also subscribe to Nakata Presents on Spotify and also bookmark the podcast page on the Nakata website. We have more episodes in this Presidential Perspective series, so check back for more. Take care and keep advising.